SmackDown was in Orlando tonight, the home of the Thunderdome. And I don't even know how this is possible, but somehow those old Thunderdome shows were more entertaining than the last few weeks of SmackDown. SmackDown seems to be getting progressively worse. Although I will say that this week was not as bad as last week. It was not worse than last week. The problem with SmackDown, the problem with a lot of WWE programming these days, it just feels like I'm watching one giant rerun. So I hope you enjoyed the SmackDown rerun tonight. Now we get to rerun back everything that happened because this is the SmackDown and Rampage review, or as I like to call it, the SmackPage review for July 15, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. We have a special referee for the WWE Tag Team Championship match at SummerSlam. The announcement was made at the end of the show. A lot of talk about who the referee was going to be. I said last week, Sami Zayn, right? He's been angling, trying to be, you know, getting the good graces of Roman Reigns. Maybe he can talk his way into being the referee for the match. They can further that story. It's not Sami Zayn. A lot of people were talking about Solo Sikoa, who has been rumored to be getting the call-up very soon to the main roster. In fact, the chatter now is that he might be called up right after SummerSlam to come up to either Raw or SmackDown. We're still not sure exactly what brand he'll be on. If they're going to put him with the Bloodline, if they're going to put him on Raw, we don't know. Talk about him, and that really wouldn't have made a lot of sense. So it's not Solo Sikoa. The special referee for the Tag Team Championship match at SummerSlam is going to be Jeff Jarrett. That's right. Good old Double J is coming to his hometown of Nashville to be the guest referee for the Usos against the Street Profits at SummerSlam. J-E-double-F. J-A-R-R-E-T-T. You know what this SmackDown show is? G-A-R-B-A-G-E. Garbage. But we're going to get Jeff Jarrett at SummerSlam, right? Old Slapnuts is coming back. Can't wait to see Slapnuts, right? What was it that the famous quote, broke 6,000 guitars, didn't draw a dime? I wouldn't go that far. I just love that quote. Was that Mike Graham? I think that was Mike Graham who made that comment. Hey, shout out to Ted Evans. Ted Evans is getting us started in a great way here tonight, dropping a $50 super chat here. Ted, I hope you're having a good Friday night. Going to get to his super chat and all of your super chats a little bit later on. I will read and try to answer all of your super chats as I do each and every week. We're not just talking about SmackDown, we're talking about Rampage as well. Jonathan Gresham tonight defending his Ring of Honor world title. I believe that was the first time that the Ring of Honor world title has been defended on Rampage successfully against Lee Moriarty. We found out, and I didn't check out the spoilers or anything, so I didn't know about this, but after the match, we come to find out the next challenger for the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship, because we have a pay-per-view coming up in 8 days. Next Saturday, Ring of Honor, Death Before Dishonor on pay-per-view, and it looked like Samoa Joe against Jay Lethal for the television title was going to be headlining the show. I saw that they were doing the world title match tonight, and I said, it makes sense, because Lee Moriarty is not a big enough challenger for Jonathan Gresham to headline a pay-per-view with. If that was going to be on the pay-per-view, they would have played second fiddle to Joe and to Jay Lethal. So I thought, okay, well, they'll headline with the TV title. No, they're going to headline with the ROH world title, and it's going to be Jonathan Gresham defending against Claudio Castagnoli, who for years was a big name in Ring of Honor and really cut his teeth there and among other places, but has never held a world championship. And Excalibur on commentary tonight, he impressed that upon us numerous times. That was clearly the go-to line, pushing the fact that Claudio has never held the world title. Kind of like just the generic, not Ring of Honor world title, just any world title. He's never won the big one. He's never grabbed the brass ring. And so that's going to be the story going into this match. But that is a terrific addition to what on paper is already looking like a super lineup for Death Before Dishonor, to the point where I'm planning on covering it live as soon as the pay-per-view is over, so you'll get some Death Before Dishonor coverage next weekend. It's looking like a hell of a card. And we could be in a situation here where at the end of next weekend, two members of the Blackpool Combat Club could be world champions. I mean, John Moxley is the interim champion, but he's got the AEW world title, the interim title. Claudio could very well have the Ring of Honor world title. Is it going to happen that way? I don't necessarily think it is, but I'm very much looking forward to seeing that. It's exactly the position that I had said I would have debuted Claudio in, which I think is what Tony Khan's original idea was to have him on the Ring of Honor brand. Not necessarily to put him in AEW right away the way that he did, but then Bryan Danielson got hurt, and the circumstances necessitated using him in a much bigger way. So it worked out for the better. You know, he came out, he got that great reaction at Forbidden Door. You know, he was the guy who won the Blood and Guts match for the Blackpool Combat Club. So it all worked out, but it does feel like Claudio is the perfect person to not only have as one of your top names in a brand new revamped Ring of Honor, because he is someone who I think fits in on that Ring of Honor brand, but he's also a former Ring of Honor name, and he is somebody who never had the chance to win the world title and run with it. You know what? He wasn't ready for it at that time. Claudio, back in 2008, 2009, 2010, he wasn't ready for it at that point. Nobody can honestly say that Claudio wouldn't be ready to be a world champion in any organization. So I'm very much looking forward to that. Hit that like button. Like I said, super chats are open. We'll be going through them here in a little bit. Original Project and Christopher Bergs have re-upped as channel members, and Super Shinken Red and Magic Mac Music are brand new channel members. So I want to welcome all of them to the channel and say welcome to the family. If you want to join, the join button is down below. Give it a shot. But we're going to start out with SmackDown here. I know. Way to bring the mood down, but we are here to talk about SmackDown. We are about 2 weeks away from SummerSlam. I know some people probably are forgetting the fact, because look, SummerSlam has never been held in July before. We are heading into the first ever July SummerSlam. We already had Money in the Bank a few weeks ago, so it's a little weird, you know, having SummerSlam in the same month, but it is coming up in 2 weeks, even though it doesn't really feel like it. Michael Cole was in the ring to open the show to introduce his broadcast partner, not your typical opening to SmackDown, where the lead announcer would be standing in the middle of the ring introducing his sidekick. But he did introduce to us the newly extended Pat McAfee. He did sign a new contract, a contract extension a few weeks ago that's going to keep him around for many more years. And Pat McAfee came out. He got a nice reaction. There was no neck brace for Pat on the show tonight, even though he was wearing one after Money in the Bank after he got attacked. He was at the UFC show. He was spotted in the neck brace. He was all good. He was good to go tonight. He apologized to the fans for having to listen to Corey Graves last week because, of course, Pat was not there. So taking a little shot at the Monday Night Raw announced team. McAfee said that his neck was bruised but not fractured. He said that he knew Happy Corbin back when they were rookie teammates. Or roommates together when they both played for the Indianapolis Colts. Back then, he said Corbin had hair, he had a bad body, but he praised his work ethic. He said Corbin went on to become an insufferable douchebag. A fan in the crowd at this point said something to Pat, probably made a comment about Corbin, a derogatory remark. I didn't hear what it was. And Pat said, looked over at the fan and said, "This ain't TV-14 yet." Referencing, of course, the report this week from Andrew Zarian that Monday Night Raw would be going to TV-14 starting this Monday. He pulled back on that report. It does sound like it is something that is going to happen, but it's not going to happen this week. And I will have a lot more to say about that on Sunday, because to me it's much ado about nothing. It's not anything to get excited about. Whether it happens or not, that is not the move that USA Network should be making. And I'll talk more about that on Sunday. But I love the fact that Pat, there's no way that they, I don't think, sent him out there to make any kind of reference to that. Pat just kind of does his own thing, right? I know they feed lines. Vince McMahon is probably in his ear feeding him certain things. But Pat just, you know, he reacts. He says what comes to mind. It's one of the things I like about Pat McAfee. But the whole TV 14 thing, it doesn't even matter as far as SmackDown goes because it's a USA Network thing. So whether Raw goes TV 14 or not, it will not have any effect on SmackDown. So it won't even matter. Corbin interrupted on the big screen. He was in the back. Told McAfee to stay in his own lane. He said that he should take a seat behind the broadcast table where he belongs. Corbin said he's a fighter, whereas McAfee runs his mouth and used to punt footballs for a living. Hey, if I could punt footballs and make the kind of money that Pat McAfee made, I would gladly punt football. I'll punt anything you want me to punt. I'll punt a child like Snitsky did. You pay me that kind of money, I'll punt anything you want. So Corbin picked up his arm, and he showed his arm on camera, and his arm had all these welts, and they looked like bruises, but they had like these red welts all over his arm. He claimed that they came from sitting in McAfee's chair last week, or maybe it was from being too close to the WWE fans. Corbin said it's like monkeypox or something. He said that he was staying away from McAfee because of his rash, but he would see him at SummerSlam. I like that they acknowledged the backstory, the little bit of history, that the legitimate history that the two of them have together. It started with the meme online. People were posting photos of them back when they were younger, back in their football days. So I like the fact that they acknowledge that instead of just completely ignoring that the two of them have history together. McAfee and Corbin may end up being one of the best matches on the entire SummerSlam card. You know, Corbin, we make fun of Corbin and everything, and I do think most of the time he's just a fucking bore. But it's not as if he's a bad worker. McAfee has proven to be very adept at this. He hasn't had too many matches, but every one of the matches that he has been involved in, about three of them so far, two NXT matches, the match with Adam Cole, and then the War Games match, I believe, that he was part of, and then the WrestleMania match with Theory, all of them very good. Excellent. Very entertaining. And I don't see Pat McAfee going into a stadium with 30,000 people. And they are up to 30,000 tickets now out for SummerSlam. Maybe they can get to 32 or 33. They'll announce 40 or something, I'm sure. But they're going to have at least 30,000 people in that stadium in Nashville. He's going to be one of the biggest baby faces on the entire show outside of Brock Lesnar, I'm sure. And I think the two of them could very well go out there and steal the show. So, again, Pat McAfee brings a lot of value to the product. And I mean, we've talked a lot about celebrities and, you know, them bringing in Logan Paul, who also had a great showing at WrestleMania. And has, you know, again, he's taken to it like a duck to water. And that's great. But I just think, you know, we're talking about Logan Paul. We're talking about Tyson Fury. We're talking about Bad Bunny. We're talking about all these different people, celebrities from the outside. I just think there's been so many of them. Pat McAfee, though, he can work, he can talk, he can do commentary. I mean, he can do it all. That's why they just re-signed him to a big contract extension, because they see the value that he brings. That, and I'm sure it also doesn't hurt that he's got one of the most popular, I don't even know if you can call it a podcast, he's got a show. One of the most popular shows on all of YouTube. All right, what do you get? A $30 million sponsorship deal? Yeah, I'd want to hold on to that guy too, if I were them. So McAfee then introduced the new SmackDown Women's Champion, gave her a great introduction, and out came Liv Morgan for the opening match, a championship contenders match against Natalya, the same Natalya who lost In what felt like record time, was it last week, I believe, to Ronda Rousey. Now she had the opportunity to challenge for a championship just by beating Liv Morgan here tonight. A lot was made about Natty on that fan cam video at the house show a few days ago. She was no selling Liv's finish after she got pinned. She very angrily said something to her and then rolled out of the ring and walked to the back. She pulled an Austin Aries on this house show. And it blew up Twitter. It blew up social media. Everybody was making a big deal about this. Like this was fucking Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels back in the day. Oh, these two hate each other. Oh, there's something going on here. Then there was a report, I think, from websites, one of these dumb sites about Natty having a bad reputation and she's been difficult lately and all this other fucking bullshit, all this nonsense. Whatever happened, it was very clear from that video that something happened in the match that pissed off Natty or made her very frustrated. She blew off some steam. She said something to Liv Morgan. Evidently, they went to the back. They went behind closed doors. Whatever the issue was, they talked it out. It was resolved. That's it. Period. End of story. It's not some giant controversy. You know, people were making it out to be a lot more than it really was. People have disagreements at work. That's what that looked like. Something happened in the match. Maybe Liv, you know, mistimed something or whatever. Whatever it was, it's been worked out. There was no drama tonight. Whatever happened there, there was no drama tonight. Michael Cole. Now, you might say there was drama in a different way, although it had nothing to do with these two women. But and I don't even know how many of you are aware of this. But Michael Cole told Pat McAfee on commentary at the beginning of the match, he goes, you know, Pat, once Pat put the headset on, he says, you know, Pat, you are trending number two. You're trending number two worldwide on Twitter behind Ricky Martin for some reason. And I thought that was odd just because usually WWE will only acknowledge things when they're trending number one, right? It's very unlike them to say, hey, we're trending number two, we're trending number three, we're trending number 10. Like they don't do that, right? So I thought that was kind of odd. And also I was kind of curious, why is Ricky Martin trending? So Michael Cole mentions this, and Pat McAfee made a comment. He said something about living La Vida Loca. Well, then I looked up why Ricky Martin was trending, and clearly Michael Cole, Pat McAfee, and probably the people in the truck at that moment did not know why Ricky Martin was trending. Had they known why Ricky Martin was trending, they probably would not have made any reference to Ricky Martin. And so for those who don't know, the reason that Ricky Martin was trending tonight, and probably still is because Ricky Martin is accused of domestic violence. He's been accused of domestic violence by his 21-year-old nephew. He's been accused of domestic violence by his 21-year-old nephew, and apparently he faces up to 50 years in prison under these incest laws that they have in Puerto Rico. That is, of course, if these allegations are found to be true. And that's all they are right now are allegations. But these are some pretty heavy fucking allegations here. Some pretty, you know, twisted shit. Of course, he denies it and we'll see where all of this goes. But yeah, he got the top trending spot in the world. I think he's got that pretty much locked up for the rest of the night. It does give a new meaning to living La Vida Loca. So Liv Morgan won with the Oblivion. After the match, Kayla Braxton got in the ring to interview Liv. She said that she couldn't help but notice. This is Kayla talking now. And Kayla says, you know, I couldn't help but notice that your win over Natty wasn't quite as dominant. It wasn't quite as impressive, basically, is what she was saying, as Ronda Rousey's win last week over Natty, which was quick. It was 2 minutes. It was dominant. It was decisive. And she was basically putting down Liv Morgan. I actually kind of liked it because, you know, usually they have these WWE interviewers. They have these women, typically women, right? That whether it's Kayla, it used to be Renee Young. Now they have this Megan Morant woman. They always make them sound so dumb, right? They make them sound like such fools when they're out there. Here, Kayla actually sounded human. She was making a legitimate observation. She says, you know, your win wasn't quite as dominant and quite as quick over Natty is the one that Ronda Rousey got. And Liv said that she understood what she was insinuating, and she knew that she would enter SummerSlam as the underdog. She said that she's been the underdog her entire life, and she said, you can call her whatever you want, but at SummerSlam, you will still call her champion. The point of the match was to position Liv Morgan as the underdog heading into SummerSlam. It's very clear that's the story they've settled on going into the pay-per-view, and it's a story that makes sense because she is the underdog, right? The story is the only reason, in the eyes of some, that Liv Morgan walked out of Money in the Bank as the SmackDown Women's Champion is because she cashed in her briefcase on a woman who had just wrestled the match and had a bum knee. And that's the only reason she walked out as the champion. She hasn't proved to be a legitimate champion. That's the undertones of this. And at SummerSlam, she's going to get a fresh Ronda Rousey, a healthy Ronda Rousey, and she's not going to be able to win, and she's going to lose her championship. That's the story that they are trying to get you to buy into. And it's a very easy story to buy into. In a straight-up one-on-one match, Ronda Rousey should beat Liv Morgan. Right? 10 times out of 10, that's going to be the outcome of that match. So they're really driving home the point that Liv is the underdog. Liv probably isn't going to make it out of the month with the championship. They really want you to buy into that. And that probably means that Liv Morgan is going to leave Nashville as the SmackDown Women's Champion, because they're making so much of it. They're making it so obvious that this woman doesn't really stand a fair chance of beating Ronda Rousey that you have to think she's going to beat Ronda Rousey. Now, this happens one of two ways. Could she beat Ronda on another, I say another because she beat Ronda with a roll-up. Could it be a fluky type straight-up clean win for her? It's possible. It's possible. But I don't see it going down that way. Either it's going to be a case where Liv is going to do whatever it takes to keep her title. That could mean a heel turn. Now, that sounds ridiculous because Liv has a lot of fans. Ronda Rousey, if anything, I think is the one that really would benefit from being turned heel. And I think, frankly, in this match, Liv is probably going to be the babyface, and Ronda, if anything, might be the heel. So to turn Liv, I think, would be ridiculous. I would love to see them turn Ronda. Even if that means Ronda wins the belt back, but she goes heel in the process, I would support that move because I think that's the right role for her to be in. I think Ronda right now is miscast. I think the better role for her would be as a heel with somebody else doing the talking for her. Whether it's Heyman or whether it's somebody else, maybe they link her up with Shayna Baszler and they make them a duo on camera because we know they're friends. That's the role I would like to see Ronda Rousey in if she's going to be on my television every week. So either Liv finds a way to cheat, to win, and turns heel, which I think would be dumb, or we see the return of Charlotte Flair. Charlotte Flair is going to be coming back very soon. We don't know when. It may not be at SummerSlam. It's going to be supposedly at some point this summer. Might we see Charlotte Flair show up at SummerSlam and distract or interfere in some way and cost Ronda Rousey the match? And that's how Liv Morgan retains her title. That's not really an ideal finish either. Because if you do that, if there's any kind of distraction, if there's any kind of outside interference, I don't see how that benefits Liv Morgan. Because now she's coming out of two straight pay-per-views with a fluke win. And unless you are turning her heel, what kind of a babyface does that make her look like? She really does need to beat Ronda straight up. I just cannot envision that happening. Unless there's some kind of a turn involved, I don't see that happening. So anyway, they've tried to create a little bit of a story here with her being the underdog, and I think it's the only story for them to do. But I think it makes it more likely that Liv leaves the pay-per-view with that championship. Megan Morant, I mentioned her a few moments ago. She was standing in the back with the Money in the Bank winner, the men's Money in the Bank winner, Austin Theory. He was boasting about being the youngest Money in the Bank winner of all time, the youngest United States champion in history. Paul Heyman showed up and he asked for a moment alone with Mr. Theory. And he took credit for Theory getting the biggest break of his career. Now, I don't know exactly what he was referring to there. My first assumption is that he was referring to his time, Heyman's time, as the executive director of Raw. When WWE made Heyman the executive director of Raw, they made Eric Bischoff the executive director of SmackDown. He lasted all of 4 months. Bischoff was fired. He was gone before SmackDown even debuted on Fox. That's how great of a job he did. Paul Heyman lasted a little bit longer. I think maybe he did a year. I'm not even sure if it was a full year. And then Vince McMahon relieved him of his duties in that position, and Heyman just went back to being an on-air, on-screen talent. During the time that Paul Heyman was the executive director of Raw during the empty arena PC era, what he was trying to do was push a bunch of younger, newer talents on TV. One of those talents was Austin Theory, who they called up prematurely. They called him up, though, from NXT. And if you remember, when he was initially called up, they paired him off with Zelina Vega and Angel Garza. I think Andrade may have been involved. At some point, though, he transitioned over to Seth Rollins, and he was one of his apostles, and it was Rollins and Murphy and Theory, and, you know, that went on for a little while, but then eventually he was called back down to NXT. It's like being dragged back down, although Hell is actually the main roster, so you can't really say he was dragged back down to Hell. It's almost like the Upside Down in Stranger Things. It's all in reverse, but he got dragged back down to NXT. And I think that was the right move to make. I think that extra time in NXT was beneficial for Theory. So my assumption is that that's what Heyman was talking about, even though, you know, as far as a storyline or a kayfabe reason, that, I mean, that was never acknowledged on TV, so that was a little strange. Maybe he was referring to something else, but that was my first thought about what he was talking about there, as far as giving Theory his first big break. Heyman said the idea of Theory cashing in his Money in the Bank made no business sense. And he implied that the real money was, in Theory, challenging Roman Reigns in a pre-scheduled match on another show. Theory told Heyman that he intends to cash in on Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar at the end of SummerSlam, and then maybe he'll need his own advocate coming out of the show once he's the champion. And Heyman did not like that. He did not like that very much. He was not very happy about that. Yeah, you know, he could have, you know, critical flaw, I thought about that too. The idea that maybe Heyman was referring to him pulling the strings behind the scenes to get Theory into the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. I kind of just chalked that up to he's Vince McMahon's guy, right? He was Vince McMahon's protege on TV. So it was Vince McMahon who got him into the Money in the Bank match. Now, you could be right too. Maybe that's what he was referring to. I don't think so, though. And I think I'm right, and we'll find out a little bit later, because Heyman did the exact same thing and gave the same exact speech with somebody else. So they played the music for the Viking Raiders, but instead of being Eric and Ivar, it was Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods cosplaying as the Viking Raiders. So we had geeks cosplaying as geeks. Sounds like Comic-Con. Here on SmackDown tonight. Woods called himself Eric the Gross. Kingston said he was Ivar the Ugly. Here's some of that PG humor for you. Don't think it would be any better if it suddenly became TV-14. You'd get a few extra cuss words and probably some fart jokes, and they'd call it TV-14. They said that the Raiders played a lot of Assassin's Creed Valhalla and watched all of the Thor movies, and so now they're resorting to underhanded tactics. That brought out the real Viking Raiders, who were not amused by any of this. They said the only words left to describe the New Day once they're done with them will be mangled and broken. Woods and Kofi mocked them some more. You know, you could say the same about WWE Creative. After they were done with the Viking Raiders, they were left mangled and broken. So Woods and Kofi mocked them some more. Ivar went to go speak, and then he stopped himself. He just dropped the mic, and they started walking down to the ring. And they had a tight shot. They never cut back to the ring. And that should have been a giveaway that somebody was coming from somewhere. They had this tight shot that they stayed on. I mean, Kevin Dunn. If you have a cat, right? When I had a cat, one of the things that I always used to amuse myself by doing, she probably wasn't amused by this, but I always found it amusing. If you have a cat and you take your hand and you hold down the cat's tail, doesn't have to be for a long time, could be 10, 15 seconds, right? Just hold down the tail so they can't move their tail and then let go. That tail is going to go flipping and flopping around all over the place, right? They can't help themselves. That was Kevin Dunn sitting in the truck as they were filming the Viking Raiders coming down to the ring because he couldn't do one of his camera cuts. He was dying. He was going to cut this way and cut that way and cut to the back and cut to the ring and cut to the ceiling and cut to the backstage area. He was ready. Oh my God, I can just picture him sitting in that chair in that truck. His leg was tapping, right? He looked like he needs a cigarette right now. He couldn't wait. He couldn't wait to cut to a different shot. But they held that tight shot. And all of a sudden, here comes Jinder Mahal and Shanky from out of nowhere. And they attacked the Viking Raiders. This was after Woods had blown his horn. He had some kind of a horn. He blew it. I guess that was the signal for Jinder and Shanky to show up and to jump these guys. And then Jinder and Shanky got in the ring and celebrated and they danced. I mean, Jinder didn't. Jinder still is not into the dance stuff, but Shanky danced with the New Day, and that was the segment. This was a fucking waste of time. That's what this whole segment was. This whole segment was a fucking waste of time, as most of these segments are on these shows. Backstage, Kayla introduced Ludwig and the Intercontinental Champion, Gunther. Of course, Gunther was not happy last week when Ludwig lost to Shinsuke Nakamura. So they showed highlights of what happened last week when he chopped him. Walter gave him a chop when the match, actually three chops when the match was over, because he was very upset that Ludwig lost to this man. Gunther said that there's no room for failure. He goes, failure is unacceptable. Braxton said that there would be a rematch between Kaiser and Nakamura next week. Gunther then ordered him to open his jacket, you know, to unzip. He had like a track jacket on so he could expose his chest. And he didn't want to do it, but he said, take your jacket off. And he ripped the jacket open and he gave him a hard chop right across the chest. You could feel it. It reverberated through this man's body. And Kaiser just crumpled down to his knees in a heap. You know, I'm starting to get worried. Last week I said, no, they're not splitting him up. It's just, you know, Walter showing that, you know, he won't tolerate failure. He doesn't like losing. So now they're going to stick with this, it looks like. This is going to be the new gimmick now, where he's going to turn this guy into his whipping boy every week. He's going to abuse this man every single week. And I'm starting to get a little bit worried that maybe they are toying with the idea, or they are leading, it is leading somewhere where these two are going to be split, which I think would be fucking terrible. These two are great together. I never would have taken Fabian Aichner out of the group, but I think Kaiser, the whole Kaiser and Walter act, it just works. So I hope, and I know I'm talking to the clown show here, but I hope that they're not seriously considering breaking these two up. But what a terrible gig if you're Kaiser, coming to work every week and having to take a chop from Walter. I'd give my 2 weeks right now. Who wants to come to work and have to deal with that every week? You look at the blackboard in the back. You have a listing of what's going on in the show tonight. You see Kaiser chopped by Walter every single week when you come to work. His chest is going to look like raw meat for the next 6 months. That doesn't sound like a fun day at the office to me. Speaking of no fun, we have a Lacey Evans segment to talk about here. Oh, joy. Lacey Evans was supposed to have a match on this show with Aaliyah. That was the plan anyway. They were going to have a match together. They were supposed to have a match, if you remember it, last week, and it didn't happen, and Lacey punched her in the face instead and then left. Actually, they were going to be tag team partners. She punched her in the face. She left. We never got the match. It was going to be them, I think, against Shayna and was it Shayna and Shotzi, maybe? I don't know. But the match never happened. Aaliyah made her way down. This was supposed to be a singles match. Evans then made her entrance, and this is her new gimmick now, where she's not very happy with the crowd reaction. As she comes down to the ring, she feels the fans aren't showing her the proper amount of respect. She gets in the ring. She gets on the mic. She says, you know, I may not be better than all of you, but you're definitely not better than me. She goes, she puts her life on the line for all these people. As she was saying this, the crowd chanted, you suck, at her. She says she's an example of what the fans should be but can't be, and they hate her for it. They hate us because they ain't us, right? They hate us because they ain't us. I was waiting for her to use that line. It was a great opportunity, and she didn't take it. Yes, quizzical. This is exactly what that is. This is just a variation of her debut segment. This is a variation of every single segment that we have seen this woman in since she came back. Hence why at the beginning of the stream tonight, I referred to SmackDown as a rerun. This show is one giant rerun every single week. That's what they should call the show. rerun on Fox. You missed it last week? No worries. You'll get to see it again tonight. And if you miss it tonight, well, don't worry about it because it'll be right back on the air next week. You won't miss a thing. Who needs DVR? This is a DVR-proof show. You don't need DVR. You can take SmackDown off your DVR right now. It's completely unnecessary. Just watch the show next week. It's not going to be much different. There might be little subtle changes here and there, but for the most part, it's pretty much the same fucking show. So then she apologized to anybody that she may have offended. It was not a legitimate apology, though. They started giving her the what treatment as well. I was giving her the what treatment, and you know my thoughts on the what chant, and I'm sitting here going, what? After everything that she said, because I felt the same way that this crowd did. Fans booed. She took issue with them not accepting her apology. She then told the fans to go to hell, and she dropped the microphone, and she left the ring. That was it. That was the entire set. I don't know how I'm going to get on with my weekend now. I have a confession to make to all of you. I really don't know what I'm going to do because we didn't get the match tonight between Lacey Evans and Aaliyah. My weekend is ruined. I was looking forward to this. This was going to set the tone for my entire weekend. I've worked hard all week, right? Everybody works for the weekend. And then we didn't get the match, and I am just devastated. And I don't know what I'm going to do with myself now. What am I going to do now? I didn't get to see Lacey Evans against Aaliyah. What the fuck am I going to do with my life now for these next 2 days? How am I going to get through this weekend now? All of my energy, everything, it's all gone now. I don't want to do anything. I'm going to be like the guy from the show just popped out of my head. It's one of my favorite shows. Narcos. There we go. Jesus. Walking around, right? The memes of him just sitting around, walking around, waiting for something to happen. That's going to be me all weekend now because I didn't get the match that I was so looking forward to. I'm going to try to get on with my life, but I'm not happy about it. By the way, I also love how Aaliyah gets sucker punched last week by this woman. So this week, Lacey comes back out, cuts another speech in the ring while Aaliyah is just standing there. Lacey says, go to hell, drops the mic, walks out. Aaliyah never even made an attempt to touch this woman. She never took two steps towards Lacey Evans. This girl looked like a fucking geek standing out there doing absolutely nothing to this woman after what she did to her last week. We saw that on Raw. When the Mysterios last week got laid out in the back by the Judgment Day, they got beat up by Finn Balor and Damian Priest. We had a segment on TV on Monday night where the Mysterios were in the ring, and here comes Judgment Day, and Rey Mysterio is standing there and allowing Damian Priest to heel on the crowd and to talk to his son and to cut this promo, and then he lets Finn Balor speak. And the whole time I'm like, Rey is standing there, and I'm thinking to myself, Rey Mysterio looks like a fucking idiot. He and his son got jumped and mauled by these two guys last week. And he's going to stand there and let them talk and do nothing. All of these baby faces are made to look so dumb. How could anybody care about any of these people when everybody on the show is so stupid? Drew McIntyre. He made his entrance ahead of what was supposed to be a match with Sheamus to determine who would go on to clash at the Castle in September to challenge for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. This, of course, is the same match that they promised us last week. They advertised it all night, and then they did the bait and switch in the main event, and they didn't give it to us. Sheamus came out after the break with Ridge Holland and Butch. Holland was introduced then as McIntyre's opponent. So they did it again. They did it again. Instead of Sheamus and McIntyre, we end up getting Sheamus ducking out, having one of his associates step into the ring with McIntyre instead. Now, last week was worse, because last week they actually advertised the match, like, all day. It might have been all week, but all day they advertised that match, and it was the main event And then they pulled it, and Sheamus faked having COVID, and they put Butch in there. And they had a two-minute match, and McIntyre squashed Butch, which is a whole other issue. I've almost just lost any interest in it anyway. I can't even bring myself to get too upset about anything involving, you know, Pete Dunne, because it is what it is, right? We knew that this was going to happen. The guy's name is Butch. He walks around like a fucking child or a dog or something, right? I mean, we all knew that this is what this was going to end up being, right? So Butch was in there last week. He got mauled, 2 minutes, done, jobbed out, whatever. Ridge Holland, I really don't give a shit either way. They basically did the same thing this week. This, though, was never advertised. So it wasn't quite as bad as what they did last week. Clash at the Castle, by the way, I should just pause for a moment and mention this. I mentioned SummerSlam, right? Coming up in a couple of weeks. They're going to be in Nashville. They have it. I think it's set up for maybe 35,000, I think is what they're setting up for in that stadium. And the stadium fits a lot more than that. But they have passed the 30,000 mark in terms of tickets that are out for SummerSlam. Clash at the Castle, however, which is not until Labor Day weekend. That's not until September 3rd, I believe is the date. They're going to be overseas in Cardiff. They're going to be at Principality Stadium. Which may be a bigger stadium than the one they're in for SummerSlam. I'm not sure if it is, how much bigger it is, but they have that set up for 71,000. And they already have 60,000 tickets out for Clash at the Castle. So Clash at the Castle is going to be a bigger show than SummerSlam this year. That's really going to be the big show. I actually think there's a much better chance Roman Reigns will drop one or both of his belts there than to Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam or Austin Theory. I think there's a better chance we see a new champion there than at the end of this month. But it's impressive. 60,000 tickets, not a single match yet to be announced for that show. Not one match has been made official yet for Clash at the Castle. They haven't even started to announce the card. They might be able to get Tyson Fury in for that show. You know, over there, overseas, he would be a draw. So they're going to sell that out. I mean, that show is going to be sold out easily. They might have to open up additional seating. But it's very interesting how that is going to be a much bigger show than SummerSlam is shaping up to be this year. So Butch went outside and he grabbed the ring bell and the hammer, and Sheamus stopped him from bringing it into the ring. Butch, though, rang the bell. He rang the bell to start the match. McIntyre used a lot of Sheamus' own moves. He did the 10 beats to the chest on the apron. He did the white noise. Finished off Holland with the Claymore kick. And that was all she wrote. More of the same. Only instead of Butch, this week it was Ridge Holland who went down to the Claymore kick. Again, rerun. This was a rerun. In the back, Megan Morant was interviewing Madcap Moss in the gorilla position before he was about to go out for his match with Austin Theory. Paul Heyman interrupts again, and he's talking to Madcap, and he points out that he was responsible for the biggest break of Moss's career. So to go to the point that I was mentioning earlier when we were talking about what Heyman may or may not have been referring to when he made that comment to Theory, once I heard him make the same comment to Moss, then he's definitely referring to his time as the executive director of Raw. Because it was also during that period, I believe, it was during that period, that Madcap, wasn't it during that period? I think that, and it might have been that Raw Underground stuff that they were doing. I believe that was the first time that we saw Madcap on the main roster. And Heyman would have been in charge of the show, overseeing the show at that time. So, almost positive that that's what he was referring to. Heyman noted that Moss injured Happy Corbin a few weeks ago. He tried to convince Moss to injure Theory tonight. Heyman promised Moss a scheduled title shot against Roman Reigns, and Moss said that Heyman must really be worried about Theory cashing in his money in the bank at SummerSlam. And Moss went out to the ring for his match. After a break, they aired a video package for Max Dupree and Maximum Male Models. They were not on the show this week, but they did give them a video, and they said that Massé and Mansoir are going to be back on SmackDown next Friday, and they are going to be showcasing their 2022 beachwear collection. Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait for that. But not only did they announce that they're going to be showing off their beachwear on TV next Friday, they said that Max Dupri is going to introduce us to his sister, Maxine Dupri. They're giving him a sister. Now, the question, of course, becomes, who are they going to call up from NXT to play the role of the sister? Maybe Vince McMahon is, he's a little close to one of his executives. Maybe he has another paralegal who works in the legal department, and maybe he wants to bump up her pay and make her an on-screen character. Who knows? Maybe it's somebody from Titan Tower. But let's assume that they're going to call somebody up from NXT. First of all, my thought is, oh God, they're expanding this. They're going all in on this. I mean, this should have been taken out back and shot in the head. No, they're expanding this. They're going to grow this thing even bigger. And now they're going to drag one of these women into it. So what woman are they going to call up from NXT to become Maxine Dupri? You know, they had a Maxine once upon a time who worked. I was actually on the old NXT shows many years ago. A little lady who went on to play the role of Katrina on Lucha Underground. I don't think they're going to be bringing her back as Maxine, though. So who's it going to be, right? And I was thinking about this, and honestly, the first name that I thought of, who I could actually see them calling up and renaming her and repackaging her and putting her in this role, is Tiffany Stratton. Yeah, she's got the Valley Girl, Daddy's Girl gimmick right now on NXT 2.0. I could see her getting the call. She has improved in the ring. She's definitely a lot better than she was even a few months ago. So she's been making improvements. I could see her being in that role. There was somebody who mentioned Ginny. For those who don't know, Ginny was on the NXT UK women's roster. She is, I believe, now married to Walter. I believe they were in a relationship, but I think they may be married now. And she's kind of been stuck in limbo. I don't know when the last time was that she was in NXT UK or was spotted anywhere on TV. Walter's here now. He's on SmackDown. Maybe that's a role for Ginny. So those would be my first top two picks, probably, as far as who would play the role. Tiffany Stratton, Ginny. I guess we'll find out. Hey, Bayley is still out. Maybe they want to repackage Bayley while they're at it. Maybe they'll repackage Bayley and they'll give her a totally new gimmick. Since they do that with everybody else anyway. So finally, 15 minutes after Theory made his entrance, he's been standing in the ring. 15 minutes later, we had Theory against Madcap Moss. This is the first of what I expect to be many matches that we will be seeing with these two over these next several years. And Michael Cole was putting this point over on commentary. But I think that these two, if they stay healthy, are on track to be two of the bigger kind of young stars that WWE is trying to develop right now. Now, I cannot believe they have kept the Madcap name. I think that they need to change that as soon as possible. Every time I hear Michael Cole call him Madcap, I just kind of shake my head like, what the fuck? You know, they changed him out of that awful gimmick. Why did he keep the name? But I think these two are two bright stars of the future that they could start to really push and really elevate and start to build around. And, you know, 5 years from now, we could be looking at Theory and Moss. I don't want to say is the next John Cena, Randy Orton type of program, but I think these are two of the names, the young names now that you're going to see at or near the top of the card, you know, carrying things on Raw and SmackDown. Theory for sure. You know, Theory is getting the God push right now. But Moss, I think, could be one of those people too. And they had a good match here up until the finish. Moss rocked Theory with a running shoulder tackle that sent him out of the ring. Moss went out after him. Theory grabbed the briefcase, hit Moss with it right in the head for the disqualification. Like I said, lame fucking finish. But they wanted to protect Madcap. They did not want to pin Moss. They didn't want to beat him. This was their way of getting around it. Theory walked down the aisle and he was talking about how, oh, I lost, but it doesn't matter because I still have the briefcase. And that's really WWE's mentality when it comes to Money in the Bank winners. We are seeing it now with Austin Theory play out much the same way that it's played out with a lot of other people who have held that briefcase, where they win the briefcase. Even Daniel Bryan, when he won the briefcase, same thing with him. They win the briefcase, and unless they win the championship right away, right, if there's any period of time where they hold on to the briefcase, WWE thinks, well, they're bulletproof because they have the briefcase, so we can beat them. We can pin them on TV every single week. And that's what they've been doing with Theory. Theory, I feel like, has lost more in the last few weeks since he won the fucking briefcase than he did in the last 4 or 5 months before that. Even this week, he lost on Monday, right? He took the losing fall on Monday, I believe. He lost again tonight. Now, is this DQ loss going to matter in the long run? No, but they just feel like you've got the briefcase, so we can just beat you. We can beat you every week, especially if you're going to cash in eventually and actually win the title. I've always thought that's a stupid fucking way of looking at it, because especially if that person is going to go on to win the championship, why would you want to beat them down at every opportunity and then have them win your world title? That just, it never computed with me. Never made any sense to me. But that's the WWE way of booking things. It's not supposed to make sense. It makes sense to them. It makes sense to them. When you have something that makes sense to that person in their brain, but it doesn't make sense to anybody else, that makes you a crazy person. That's the WWE style of booking. It's never really meant to make any kind of real sense. So Theory is gloating in the aisleway, even though he just lost, and all of a sudden he gets interrupted by Sami Zayn, who walks out with his arm in a sling. Zayn noted that Theory was insulting the bloodline by claiming that he would win the championship at SummerSlam, and he demanded that he apologize to Roman Reigns. Theory mocked Sammy and pointed out that he had his arm in a sling, and all of a sudden the Usos came out. They got a big pop, too, when their music hit. And the Usos came out. Theory walked back down the aisle all the way back to ringside, and when he turned around, he walked right into the clutches of Moss, who scooped them up. Ran him headfirst into the ring post, and then Moss picked up the Money in the Bank briefcase, handed it to Theory, and then tossed him over the barricade by the timekeeper's area. So, old Madcap gets to save face, but I thought it was a good match. Up until the crappy finish, I thought it was a good match. The main event was Angelo Dawkins against Jimmy Uso. Sami Zayn sat in on commentary. Again, rerun. Jimmy Uso against Angelo Dawkins. Montez Ford against Jey Uso. Montez Ford against Jimmy Uso. Angelo Dawkins against Jey Uso. It's like Groundhog Day. Zayn said that there have been discussions about him possibly being the special referee at SummerSlam. As soon as he said that, I knew it wasn't going to be him. Cole was asking him if he was wearing his arm in a sling for sympathy in case Roman Reigns showed up tonight. There was a spot where Jimmy ran right into Charles Robinson. He bumped him, and Robinson took this great bump, and he went down. Dawkins rolled up Jimmy for the visual pin. Dawkins gave up, went over to check on the referee, turned around, ate a super kick from Jimmy, who also got a visual pinfall. Dawkins ended up hitting the sky high on Jimmy, and he pinned him, but it was very clear that Jimmy's right shoulder was up the entire time. Just the positioning of Dawkins' knee, Jimmy's shoulder was never down on the mat. Robinson, who had just been bumped, the whole point of the bump was that the referee was disoriented, didn't know where he was, so he counted the pin and should never have counted three. So he counted three. Dawkins won the match. Sami Zayn immediately pointed out what I just talked about, that his shoulder was up. Michael Cole concurred. They showed multiple replays of it. Street Profits were celebrating their win. The Usos were protesting their loss. All of a sudden, here comes Adam Pearce. Adam Pearce comes out, says that both teams have suffered from botched referee calls, so they would have a special referee at SummerSlam, as we all know. And I have the perfect person for the job. And he directed our attention to the video screen. And they proceeded to show us a Jeff Jarrett highlights video. Here at the end of SmackDown on Fox, 9:58 p.m., We are sitting and watching a Jeff Jarrett highlights package. Fucking Jeff Jarrett is going to be the referee for this tag team championship match at SummerSlam with the Street Profits and the Usos. Why is Jeff Jarrett going to be the referee? Because Nashville. That's literally the only reason why Jeff Jarrett is going to be the referee. He already works for the company. They just hired him to be their, basically their director of live events. So he's got an executive position in the company now. He's got his podcast going. I mean, this guy's riding high. And now he's going to get a big pop, big hometown pop coming out in front of 30,000 people at SummerSlam in this big stadium. He'll come out. He'll do the Jarrett strut, which is really the Flair strut, which is really the Fargo strut. But he'll do the strut. I'm sure somebody will get popped with a guitar. Maybe he'll get a little payday out of it. To say that this was random would be an understatement. And it didn't exactly get much of a reaction. because who in that building would fucking care? It's Jeff Jarrett being a referee for a tag team championship match. People in Nashville might care. They'll probably give him a nice reaction, but wherever the hell they were tonight, I don't think they gave a shit. So they make the announcement. And by the way, I was wondering too, I was saying, given that Jeff Jarrett is going to be on the show, I wonder if maybe they'll give away some free Global Force gold bars to the first 5,000 people through the turnstiles. They can make that a gimmick to try to sell more tickets to the show. Like you go to a baseball game or something and they have like bobblehead giveaways and stuff, and they say the first 2,000 people in get a free bobblehead or a free hat or a free shirt. They could do a whole promotion around SummerSlam to try to sell more tickets, where the first, 3,000 people through the turnstiles get their own personally autographed Global Force gold bar. I'm sure he's got them all stacked up in his garage. I doubt he sold all of them. He's probably got a whole bunch of them. You got to unload them somehow. So maybe if you go to SummerSlam this year, you might get yourself a gold bar. They were running short. Clearly, they had a lot of time left to kill before they went off the air. So the Usos and the Street Profits, they start brawling. Sammy's talking on commentary. This felt like it went forever. And finally, they hit 10 p.m. and they went off the air. This show. I said last week, SmackDown is an abysmal show. It might be worse than Raw. I say might because Raw is still 3 hours and there's nothing worse than an awful 3-hour show. But I think the quality of SmackDown has dipped so much that it might actually be worse than Raw on most weeks. This show this week was not worse than last week's show, but it was still awful. And I don't know what else to say about it at this point. Clearly, they're lacking in star power. When Brock isn't there, when Roman isn't there, it's very noticeable. But even if Roman was on the show, it's not as if the show would magically be better. The fact that they are devoid of these big names just makes it that much worse, because it just feels like there are no real stars on this show. When those guys aren't around, there are no real stars on this show. But just the quality of the show. Last week, we had 13 minutes of action. We had more wrestling this week, but again, still, for the most part, short matches. In some cases, no matches. People walking out before the match even starts. Segments and angles and gimmicks that, who could possibly get invested in any of this? Who could possibly care and be truly entertained and interested in so many of the things that are going on this show right now? And we're heading into the second biggest, or depending on if you're a Royal Rumble fan, third biggest show of the year. This year, it'll be the fourth biggest, because Clash at the Castle is shaping up to be bigger than SummerSlam. So Brock Lesnar is going to be back on the show. Speaking of star power, they'll get a little bit of star power back next week, because Brock Lesnar is going to be back on the show next Friday. And as if it wasn't bad enough that Maximum Male Models is going to add another victim to their roster, and we're going to have the beachwear unveiling or whatever they're calling it next week. In addition to that, you all have something else to look forward to next Friday, because Liv Morgan and Ronda Rousey are going to go face to face before their match at SummerSlam. And that means that Ronda Rousey is going to have a microphone in her hand. Oh boy. That's never a good thing. But that's something to look forward to next Friday. We switch over to TNT. It was the 50th episode of AEW Rampage. And it opened with Malakai Black and Brody King taking on Alex Reynolds and John Silver of the Dark Order. We had some good action. But there wasn't any drama really in how this was going to go. It was, you know, John Silver and Alex Reynolds. John Silver is very good. You know, Alex Reynolds is fine. John Silver, though, when he gets those hot, fiery babyface comebacks, he's a lot of fun to watch. But they are slotted in at a certain level on the show. So, you know, they're not going to win the match. Doesn't mean they still can't go out there and have a great match, but this wasn't a great match. This was fine. As an opener, I thought it was good. Reynolds ducked a kick from Black. He got the tag to Silver. Took Malakai down with a flying uppercut. Silver got a near fall after an angle slam. It was Reynolds who took the losing fall, though, to Dante's Inferno from Black and Brody King. The real eventful stuff happened when the match was over. House of Black is making their way up the ramp. They're going to the back. All of a sudden, here comes Darby Allin. I didn't even see where this guy came from. It wasn't as if he was already just standing there and people could see him. It was almost like he was in the shadows somewhere on top of the entrance tunnel. It might have been the heel tunnel on the left. And then from out of the shadows, he comes running like a bat out of hell off the top of the tunnel, dives off, and lands on Brody King. I don't know. Maybe he was kneeling down or something. I think his buddy over there, Sting, is rubbing off on him. This guy, he knows how to hang back in the shadows where you can't even see this fucking guy. But he launched himself off. He landed on top of Brody King. And so Darby and Brody now, he's on Brody's back, and he's like an annoying bug, and Brody is trying to get him off. They brawl off into the crowd. Well, here comes Sting out of the babyface tunnel. He walks out. Malakai Black is on stage. Sting is on stage. They're having a staring contest. Remember the staring contest that Conan would have with Andy on his show? They were having a staring contest. Meanwhile, Darby and Brody are brawling in the crowd. And people are going nuts, though, for Sting and Malakai on stage. That's really what people are into. I'm watching this, and I have to say, you know, looking at the two of them staring each other down on stage, I am intrigued by the potential of a match between Malakai Black and Sting. And I think in part because it's one of those matches that I just never really thought about. Right? Sting against Malakai Black. I mean, why would they do that match? But I'm watching these two, and, you know, they're two dark characters, and it's part of the appeal, honestly, I think, that a lot of people had with wanting to see The Undertaker in there with Sting. Now, Undertaker was a much bigger star than Malakai Black, but, again, dark, brooding character. And I am all of a sudden very intrigued at the possibility of seeing those two in the ring together. Now, I think probably not going to get that as a singles match. I think much better chance we'll get the tag match instead. And we'll get House of Black against Sting and Darby. But that was a very interesting little stare down there on stage. We got a Miro video. He called out Malakai and said that he wonders if he should rip off heads or tear off spines. Miro said that the darker it gets, the clearer he sees Black, and he wondered. He wondered if Malakai sent his people to destroy him or to recruit him. Which is a very interesting turn of events there. The Ring of Honor World Championship was on the line next with the newly heeled Jonathan Gresham with Tully Blanchard Enterprises flanking him, defending his title against Lee Moriarty. A wild Brian Cage appeared on the show tonight. Holy shit. At this rate, I feel like I got a better chance of catching Bigfoot than I do a Brian Cage appearance. But there he was. They even mentioned him briefly on commentary. I heard Excalibur mention his name. He was in the background as they were all coming down to the ring. So I know he's there. I know he's still employed. I still have no idea why Tony Khan rolled over his contract. Neither does he. He was as surprised as anybody when it happened. But considering how often they use him, I still don't quite understand why Tony Khan even bothered to roll over his contract in the first place. But the other thing that was very noticeable, and this is to take nothing away from Gresham as an in-ring performer, but it was noticeable. Gresham comes out. He's obviously a very small man as far as height-wise, right? He's very small. Tully Blanchard just towers over him. And, you know, Tully is, he's the manager. He's 60. He's got to be late 60s at this point. And he walks out. He's bigger than Jonathan Gresham. And Jonathan Gresham is the world heavyweight champion. And it was just odd, you know. Now that he's going to be his manager, to see Tully just tower over him like that was something else. We have Bobby Cruz as the ring announcer and Caprice Coleman on commentary, as they do for all these Ring of Honor matches. They had a good match. The problem is that I feel like more than half of it took place during the picture-in-picture. So I can't really say that it was anything great because I feel like we missed half the match. You know, I mean, come on. Can't pay attention to what's going on in that tiny box. When they came back, though, the action was pretty good. Moriarty hit a great drop kick, got a single underhook suplex with a bridge for a near fall. Lee got another near fall off a cradle, but Gresham trapped him in an octopus and stretched him for the submission. So Jonathan Gresham remains the Ring of Honor world champion. Tony Schiavone got in the ring after it, interviewed Gresham, and he was gloating about winning. Gresham said that everybody would be seeing his face on TNT every week from now on. He's going to be on every Rampage. Said that he is going to outclass and out-wrestle everyone's favorites. All of a sudden, we hear the music of one Claudio Castagnoli. And he comes walking out. He stands on stage, and he stares at Gresham from afar. And that was it. He never said anything. He never came down to the ring. There was no back and forth. There was nothing. It was so quick. And they just cut to the next segment. But I love it. I love, as I said at the beginning of the stream, I love the idea that they are going to use Claudio not only as a member of the Blackpool Combat Club, but they will position him as one of the top names on that Ring of Honor brand. If it were up to me, I'd make him the champion. Claudio should be on AEW television as well. But he should be the Ring of Honor world champion. Whether you make him the champion next weekend, if you build to it, he is a guy who I think if you give him the ball to run with, he'll run with it. If you want to put the championship on somebody and eventually groom another kind of newer, younger guy to take the title off of him, or if you want to put the championship on someone who has some name value on a national scale, as he does, being on WWE television for so many years, right? It does mean something. And somebody who we know he can go in the ring, we know that. But somebody you can really build around at the top of that division, Jonathan Gresham, very talented guy. Not saying that he shouldn't be in the mix, but if it's up to me, Claudio's my guy. Claudio is my guy. So I love the fact that they have added this match now to the Death Before Dishonor card. I think it's a great idea to headline the show with that. It's smart, too, because, again, he debuted only a few weeks ago, got a big win at Forbidden Door. They gave him the winning fall in the Blood and Guts match. He beat Jake Hager on TV on Wednesday. He is undefeated. He's unbeaten so far in AEW. That begs the question. Do you beat him next Saturday on the Ring of Honor show? Does he suffer his first loss on a Ring of Honor pay-per-view? That probably isn't going to be seen by all that many people. You know, does it make sense to have Jonathan Gresham be the one to hand him his first defeat? I don't think that people are going to be very happy if you do a main event that has some kind of a non-finish or a draw or a DQ. So if they want to give people an actual finish. You're either going to beat Claudio straight up, and he's no longer going to be undefeated after just debuting, or you put the Ring of Honor world title on Claudio Castagnoli. I told you what I would do. I'm not convinced that that's what they're going to actually do with him. I feel like it would be... Probably it feels a little too soon. They just announced the match. The pay-per-view's a week away. You know, do you want to have more than one match? Do you want to set up an entire program with the two of them? You could do that. It does feel too quickly, given how they only just announced the match tonight. But I just feel like he's the guy who should be in that position. I would have the title on him. I wouldn't have the title on Gresham. We got a backstage promo from Christopher Daniels, who was sticking up for Samoa Joe. He said that he's one of Joe's best friends, and he just might want to choke out Jay Lethal before Lethal gets into the ring with Joe at the Ring of Honor show. Daniels is still rocking that bloodshot eye. It's hard to believe, you know. He got kicked in the face. He got kicked in the eye by, might have been Matt Jackson. Pretty sure it was in a match with the Young Bucks over a year ago. I think it was March of last year. They were still doing the pandemic shows at Daly's Place. And he just got kicked in the face, and his eye just filled with blood. And here we are, like almost a year and a half later, and the eye is still all fucked up. And he's talked about it before, and, you know, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't affect his vision. He can see perfectly fine. It's just freaky to look at. I mean, he looks like a pro wrestler, right? So, I mean, it's kind of cool, I guess, in a way. But it's crazy that, you know, they don't know if it'll ever resolve itself. His eye could resolve one day on its own, or he could be like that for the rest of his life. There's really nothing they could do for it. But it's been, you know, yeah, it's been pretty much almost a year and a half at this point that his eye has been like that. It's kind of freaky. We had Athena and Chris Statlander against the Renegade Twins. Athena and Statlander hit them both with drop kicks before the bell. They took Robin Renegade out with a Codebreaker out of an electric chair drop, and then the bell rang. So now the match is official, and it was not really official for very long. This didn't go very long after that. Athena took out Charlotte with the O-Face for the win. That eclipse was on fucking point. I thought that looked great. I'm sure it's hell on her hips, but that move, when she connects with it, and the person's in the right position, she lands it. It's one of the best-looking finishers in all of wrestling. So I thought that looked great. After the match was over, Layla Gray, who is the interim member of the Baddies, she's filling in for Red Velvet, who's out injured right now. She had been sitting in the front row watching all 45 seconds of this match. She gets up on the apron, and the babyfaces drag her into the ring, and they start, you know, battering her until Jade Cargill and Kiera Hogan, they come running down to the ring. They lay out the baby faces. That was pretty much the entire segment. So I guess the story here is that Stokely Hathaway had Layla kind of take one for the team and sacrifice herself to allow Jade and Hogan to come down and lay out the baby faces. I think that's what they were going for here. But, I mean, this whole thing got no time. I mean, this thing was like blinking, you fucking missed it. It was crazy. I mean, I'm all for, like, you know, these squash wins, if you want to set up a squash win every now and then for somebody. But my God, this was, I mean, they just rushed right through this. So in the back, we had Lexi Nair. And good old Lexi was interviewing Lee Moriarty after his loss to Jonathan Gresham. All of a sudden, Stokely Hathaway interrupted. It was Lee and Matt Sydal, who has been with Lee and training him everywhere Lee goes. There goes Matt Sydal. So in walks Stokely Hathaway, and he wants to talk to Lee Moriarty and offer his services. He gave him his business card and said, you know, you haven't really been making too many appearances. You've been in the ring with people like CM Punk and Bryan Danielson in the past. He goes, basically, I can help you out. And Sydal took the card. He ripped it up and said he doesn't need you. Stokely left. You could already see where they're going with this. But Sydal told Lee Moriarty, he goes, you know, I got something big planned for you. He made it sound like he had gotten this guy another championship match. He goes, I got you a match next week with Dante Martin. And I'm thinking, that's it? Fire the guy. I'd fire him on the spot. I'd go chase Stokely down the hallway and say, hey, wait up. That's the best that Matt Sydal can come up with. I got you a match with Dante Martin.
Now let me break here for a minute and talk about this, because this is important stuff. People have all sorts of reasons for using a VPN. You know that I've been using ExpressVPN for some time now. I've talked about it a lot. I use it mainly for security reasons. But I know a lot of you have used it to save money on wrestling shows by spoofing your location, because a lot of these pay-per-views end up being cheaper outside the U.S. But there's also people who don't use ExpressVPN who browse online and end up having their identity stolen or important data of theirs collected right under their nose by these data brokers without even knowing it. And that data then gets sold to other people. To mask my digital footprints, I protect myself with ExpressVPN. One of the easiest ways these brokers tie your data back to you is through your device's unique IP address, which can also tell them about your location. When you're connected to ExpressVPN, your IP address is hidden. That makes it a hell of a lot more difficult for these brokers to identify who you are. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network traffic, which helps keep your data safe from hackers when you're on a public Wi-Fi network, for example. This is why I have ExpressVPN installed on my laptop and on my phone. You can even download it to your home Wi-Fi router. All I do is tap one button to turn it on, and I'm protected. You don't have to be David Copperfield. There's no magic trick involved. So make sure your online activity and data is protected with the best VPN money can buy. Visit expressvpn.com/solomonster right now and get 3 extra months free through my special link. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. Visit expressvpn.com/solomonster to learn more.
Tony Schiavone was in the ring. He was getting interviewed the Gun Club, Billy Gunn and his sons, to find out why they did what they did to the Acclaimed on TV last week. They finally split up the Acclaimed and the Gun Club, and they laid out Caster and Bowens and why did you do what you did? So Billy Gunn, who apparently is working with 2 contracts in AEW and also made a comment on I guess it would have been a podcast or a radio show within the last few days that he is trying to get Road Dogg into the company, not necessarily as an on-screen talent, but he's trying to get his boy Road Dogg into the company and I guess maybe get a little New Age Outlaws reunion going, because, you know, the Hardy Boys reunion didn't work out too well. The Hardy Boys reunion crashed and burned. So maybe now they can get the New Age Outlaws together. That's exactly what we need. But that sounds like it would be more of a behind-the-scenes kind of role, if anything. So Billy Gunn admitted that he treated the Acclaimed better than he treats his own sons, but sometimes daddy ass has to drop the hammer. I feel like I don't need to be hearing about this. This brought out the Acclaimed. They were not there to rap. Caster did not have a microphone in his hand. It came down to the ring. Billy tried to get them to scissor him, but Bowens hit Billy with a super kick. The Acclaimed took out the Ass Boys, and then Caster rapped. And he rapped about Billy Gunn being hung like a tadpole, and again, something I didn't need to hear about. Bowens challenged the Guns to a match right now, and Austin Gunn said, "You want the match? Everybody wants the match? Too bad, you're not getting the match." But the Acclaimed were over huge in this segment as babyfaces. So you've heard me say that I think I would belt them. I would belt them at some point in the not too distant future, but they have to start winning matches. This should be the beginning of their win streak. Because the one thing the Acclaimed has not done much of is win. You can't be taken seriously as a challenger for the tag team championships if you don't win. And in AEW, they have a ranking system that they try to incorporate and actually follow and use. So, you know, there's no title match in their immediate future. But now is the time to start building their credibility, to start padding their win-loss record. And then eventually, you know, months from now, whether the Bucks have the belts or FTR has the belts, it probably should be a heel team. The Acclaimed is the team I would go with to build up for a tag team title run. You know, they have Private Party. They have a lot of young teams in this company. But the Acclaimed, they're over. When that music hits, people are waiting to see what Max Caster is going to say. They're the ones that I would start pushing right now towards those titles. Main event was the Lucha Brothers against Private Party. Speaking of Private Party, Andrade and Jose the Assistant were in Private Party's corner. Tony Khan had said that Andrade was hurt. He was hurt 3 weeks ago after that great match he had with Rey Fénix. He didn't say what the nature of the injury was, but Andrade tweeted later and said, "It's a minor thing. I'll be back in a week or two." So he was out there in their corner, but right now he's not cleared to perform. And I'm watching this, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, we don't see Private Party on TV very often. You know, I know Private Party has been at the dark tapings, so they're around. It's not like they haven't been working, but they haven't been featured on Dynamite. They haven't been featured on Rampage. They're out there with Andrade and Jose, and it reminded me of the whole Hardy Family Office thing, and what a fucking failure that whole faction was. And then he sold it to Andrade, and now it's the AHF or whatever. Why is that even still a thing? Why is that even still a thing? Private Party's out there with Andrade in their corner, and I'm like, this is the worst faction I've ever seen. And I've seen some bad factions. I've seen Retribution. I've seen, remember Apple on WWE television? We had Apple. We had Core on SmackDown with the remnants of the Nexus. They call them the Core. I've seen some pretty fucking terrible factions in my day. But at least those factions were together. When they came out every week, three guys, four guys, five guys, you knew they were a unit. You knew they were a group. I don't know what the fuck this is. I would like to see them quietly dissolve. Maybe the Andrade Family Office can file for Chapter 11 and they can kind of just go their own separate ways. Lucha Brothers hit a double superkick on Mark Quinn. Private Party came back with cutters. They had control going into the final picture-in-picture break. Yeah, you think I'm joking. There was a faction in WWE. I'm almost positive it was on Raw. It was called Apple. I believe Santino Marella was the leader, or he was part of it in some way. I couldn't tell you. If you told me my life depended on it, I could not tell you anyone else who was in that faction. I know Santino had something to do with it. Somebody look up the lineup and tell me who was in Apple. I would like to know who was in Apple. I don't think it lasted very long. So back from break, Penta hit a Death Valley driver into the corner. He had Mark Quinn on his shoulders and actually dumped him in the corner onto Isaiah Cassidy, who was sitting in the corner. Then he hit the Made in Japan to Mark Quinn for a near fall. All of a sudden, the two managers start fighting on the outside of the ring. Penta kicks Andrade, who had climbed up onto the apron, so he kicked him and knocked him off. The referee is distracted. Here comes Roosh. Roosh runs into the ring. Referee's back is turned. And Roosh clubs Penta in the back of the head with a forearm. And then it looked like he grabbed Penta and was throwing him either into Mark Quinn or at Mark Quinn. But I guess the idea is that Penta jumped up and ended up execute, like the momentum sent him over, and he ended up executing a destroyer to Mark Quinn. That's what I got out of this whole thing. Because Roosh attacked Penta, but then Penta took out Mark Quinn and then just tagged his partner. And it's like, wait a minute. Roosh ran into the ring and clubbed this guy in the back of the head. And it's like, it's practically like he no-sold it. The spot just looked weird. It came off very awkward to me. Fénix, though, ended up hitting the Black Fire Driver for the win. And they rushed right off the air. Almost as soon as the three count came, within seconds, they were gone. They rushed off the air. And then they were airing some one of the Men in Black movies. I don't know if it was part two or part three. I never saw part three. I don't know if part three is worth it. But actually, I never saw part two, now that I think about it. I saw the original. I doubt the sequels are as good as the original, right? So I probably don't even have to see them. But that was Rampage. A marginally better show than SmackDown. But to be honest with you, neither of these shows were very exciting tonight. So Dynamite on Wednesday, we have barbed wire everywhere. Deathmatch, Chris Jericho, The Painmaker, one-on-one with Eddie Kingston. Varsity Blondes take on Christian Cage and Luchasaurus. Brody King goes one-on-one with Darby Allin. Best Friends take on Jon Moxley and Wheeler Yuta. And on Rampage next Friday, we have Dante Martin against Lee Moriarty. And I believe, actually, that's the only match so far that they have announced. I would think that we're going to get Christopher Daniels against Jay Lethal, right? I mean, that was basically what Christopher Daniels said. He wants to get Jay Lethal in the ring before Death Before Dishonor. Well, Death Before Dishonor is next Saturday, so either Tony Khan announces the match for Wednesday, or he most likely announces the match for Friday. You know, it seems like they're keeping the Ring of Honor stuff mostly to Rampage. So my guess is that in the next few days, Tony Khan will make the announcement. It'll be Christopher Daniels against Jay Lethal. That'll be a win for Lethal heading into his TV title match with Samoa Joe. Speaking of which, next Saturday, Death Before Dishonor, we have Mercedes Martinez defending her Ring of Honor Women's Championship against Serena Deeb. We've got Wheeler Yuta defending his Pure title against Daniel Garcia. We've got Samoa Joe against Jay Lethal for the Ring of Honor television title. We've got Jonathan Gresham defending the Ring of Honor World Championship against Claudio Castagnoli. And we have FTR putting their Ring of Honor tag team titles on the line in a rematch, round two, against Jay and Mark, the Briscoe brothers, and it will be 2 out of 3 falls. A match stipulation that both teams are very familiar with. We have seen the Briscoes in a lot of 2 out of 3 falls matches over the years. We've seen FTR have their share of 2 out of 3 falls matches. In fact, one of my all-time favorite tag team matches was not only FTR and the Briscoes from a few months ago, but it was 2 out of 3 falls, TakeOver Toronto. 2016, the Revival against DIY. That was a great fucking match. The Revival had great matches with DIY. They had great matches with American Alpha. I don't remember if they had a 2 out of 3 falls match with American Alpha, though. But if you did not see the video feature, it's about 6 minutes long. AEW posted it on their YouTube channel. It was a sit-down interview in a room. FTR and the Briscoes. Caprice Coleman was sort of the moderator. He was the host. Fantastic. Just a fantastic segment. A fantastic way to build up that tag team match for the pay-per-view. It's 6 minutes. Go out of your way to watch it. On paper, this looks like a hell of a card. I don't know if they're going to add anything else. They probably will. Maybe they'll throw a multi-man tag match or something on the undercard, but right now, it looks like I'll be covering the Ring of Honor show next weekend, most likely. So that's next Saturday, and I would be live on YouTube, as I always am, when that show is over. Take a look at the Twitter poll for SmackDown. We have got 27% of you giving this show a thumbs up, and 73% of you have called SmackDown G-A-R-B-A-G-E. Called Garbage. Rampage, 80% thumbs up, 20% thumbs down. I don't think that was an 80% thumbs up show, but again, that's why I don't vote in these polls. These polls are not for me to vote. You can vote at Solomonster on Twitter. All right. Now we get to the fun stuff with your questions, your comments, addictions, whatever it may be. Hang out here for a little bit. We like to make this show interactive, and I very much appreciate everybody who supports, dropping a super chat, showing some love for what I do here. C. Moonsault, we'll start with him. $4.99 super chat. What's with all the buzz for this Takeshita kid? He needs to slow down and sell more. He just jumps from one move right to the next. I disagree. I think Takeshita is awesome. I think he's the future. I think he's somebody that Tony Khan should make every effort to, if not sign, try to get him on his television show as much as possible. Because this kid, I think, is going to be a big star. Spicy Dried Chicken as his winners for the G1 block as Okada, Jay White, Naito, and Will Ospreay. Well, it's funny. I'm going to have my G1 predictions as well. I will be having my G1 predictions on the podcast on Sunday. That'll be episode 765. So we'll see if mine match up with yours. Edwin Nunez with the $9.99. Thank you, Edwin. Thank you very much. I went to SmackDown tonight. It was my first wrestling event, and it was a lot of fun. Can't wait to go to an AEW show. Well, the shows live are always more fun, especially if you've never been before. I've always told people, even when Raw was at its worst, I would tell people, if you've never been to a Monday Night Raw, if you've never been to a SmackDown, Dynamite, anything like that, you should definitely go at least once. The live experience is always more fun. I've been to so many of them that I just, you know, it would take a lot to get me to want to go to a Monday Night Raw. I don't know that I'll ever be at a Monday Night Raw ever again. But if you've never been, I would encourage you to go. So I'm glad you had fun. Temjin Zephyr, $9.99. Thank you, Temjin. Ah, there's the Million Dollar Man blocking my super chat. Blocking my super chat. Spicy dry chicken coming in hot. Another $2. But we've got Temjin Zephyr. With Claudio going for the Ring of Honor World Championship, do you see the reign of Gresham coming to an end, or is it too soon for that to happen? Well, you know, it's easy to forget that, you know, Gresham has had the title for a while. It's just that we haven't really seen him defend it very often. If it were up to me, I would go with Claudio. I don't think they're going to. I feel like they're going to keep that title on Gresham, especially he just turned heel. Now he's part of this Tully Blanchard group. It feels premature to now suddenly take the title away from him. So I don't think they're going to. But I would. Food Hive. Remember that guy called Private Party Hot Garbage? I don't remember who that was. No, actually, I don't. I don't remember. Aussie of Steel with the $10 super chat. What's going on, Aussie of Steel? Do you think the time has come for the New Day to split up? It has been 7 years, and they have definitely cemented their legacy, but I feel it is time. There is 0% chance that the New Day breaks up before Big E comes back. We don't even know if Big E will ever be back as a wrestler. But even if it's just to come back and wave and announce his retirement, there is no chance. There is no chance. I will grow my hair out and get a mohawk if the New Day breaks up or one guy turns on the other before Big E has a chance to come back. Not going to happen. And you say it's been 7 years. It's been a long time. It has been a long time. I think that there is always the way I would do it, I don't think anybody has to turn on anybody. I think they could always just kind of go their separate ways. It would be kind of like an unofficial split without actually splitting them up. But, you know, at this point, not going to happen. Not going to happen. Ted Evans, earlier dropping that 50 spot, that $50 super chat. I feel the love from Ted Evans. Keep up the fine work. Couple of things. I agree with you on Malakai wrestling singles more than tags. Where's Ian Riccaboni? Would rather have him do commentary than JR, to be honest. Lastly, Miro needs to be booked to the moon. Well, we definitely need to see more of Miro. I would imagine they're saving Ian Riccaboni for whatever their weekly show is going to be. They may not be able to get television. I don't know that there's a big market right now for a Ring of Honor television show. It may end up being a streaming show, but I think once they have weekly television wherever it airs, I would think that Riccaboni would be brought in to be the lead play-by-play guy. It probably would be Riccaboni and Caprice Coleman. In fact, we have a pay-per-view, right? We have a pay-per-view coming up on Saturday. I'd be very surprised if he wasn't on commentary for that show. Shinakuma, thank you for the two. Angry Magma. At the bar, wasted. $200 on a girl. Should have sent to you. Yes, you should have. What's wrong with you, Angry Magma? If you wasted it on me, you'd feel better about yourself, at least. That's a lesson learned. Now you've learned a very valuable lesson. Never spend $200. I hope you didn't spend that at the bar. He says, at the bar, wasted. It almost read like you spent $200 on her at the bar. What did you spend $200 on exactly? That's a very expensive dinner. I'm guessing that you probably bought her a gift, maybe. What exactly did you spend that $200 on? We've got the Yatagarasu with the $8 super chat. Best Jeff Jarrett was MMA Dojo Jarrett in TNA putting ankle locks on children. Yes, that was like Kramer on Seinfeld when he was doing the karate, and he was winning against all the little brats. Jeff Jarrett over the years has had his moments. But I am not going to sit here and pretend that I am so excited to see him making a big SummerSlam appearance here for this Usos and Street Profits. But it's Nashville, so he may be over in Nashville. He was over in the Royal Rumble when he came back a few years ago. I wouldn't say he was super over, but he was over. Dev to Dust, $5 super chat. The robbery and shootout scenes in The Dark Knight were inspired by the movie Heat. I believe I did read that somewhere, and it makes total sense. I love both movies. I love Heat, and I love The Dark Knight. Two of my favorite movies. Your boy Hobo with the $5. What's up? Would it be a good idea for Warner Media to strike a deal with AEW to feature Rampage and Dynamite on HBO Max, like an AEW network? No, I don't. For the same reason, I don't think it would be a good idea for WWE to put Raw on Peacock, because we're not yet at that point where I feel like it would make a lot of sense to do that. You need to be on television. You want maximum visibility. You want to be on one of the networks like SmackDown is, or at least on one of the major cable channels, which both WWE and AEW are. USA is still a major cable station. TNT and TBS, right? They're in 95 million homes or 100 million homes. You're going to take that off and put it on a streaming service that has how many subscribers? Do we even know? So I think that would be a bad idea right now. That could be where things go. You know, 5 years from now, maybe that's where things go. But I think they definitely should get some content on HBO Max. Maybe that, you know what? Ring of Honor on HBO Max. I wouldn't put AEW on HBO Max, but maybe Ring of Honor on HBO Max could be like an interesting test for Warner Media to kind of test the waters on that and see how it does. See if it generates any interest. See if they can track how many people are watching it. I'm sure internally they can track all that shit. Maybe that's a good landing spot for Ring of Honor. 420 Baked Chicken Con Flavor with the $2 super chat. Any interest in A&E's WWE Rivals series? I saw that they did one for Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. I have not watched it. I am going to try to watch that and the Undertaker doc this weekend, but I'm very busy. I don't know if I'll be able to get them all in before I do the show on Sunday. If I do, I will review them. So, yes, I do want to watch them, but I just have not had time to give them a watch yet. Derek Fleming, TV14, stands for ages 14 and below. This show sucks. K-Dog's Kennel with the $5. Thoughts on Theory holding the briefcase until Cody comes back, cashing in on him once he inevitably wins the world title? SummerSlam is too obvious. Yeah, I would not have him cash in. I would not have him cash in and win the championship at SummerSlam. I would have him hold on to the briefcase. I think, though, that if you build to Cody's big comeback, if Cody wins the Royal Rumble, and if Cody goes to WrestleMania, if they don't get The Rock, it's going to be Cody and Roman. If Cody wins the title, and then all of a sudden Theory comes and cashes in, you have had a heel champion by that point for 2.5 years, and he finally loses the titles, and then another heel comes in 5 minutes later and cashes in and takes them away. I don't know about that. I feel like this run for Roman as a heel, a dominant heel, has gone on for so long. And I know Theory is a different type of heel, but Do you really want to do that? You want to take the title of Roman, put it on Cody, and just put it right back on another heel? I don't think I would want to do that. But I agree, SummerSlam would be way too soon for that to happen. Dr. Scorpio, I can't wait for Triple M segment next week. It's going to be a great train wreck to watch. Dallas Caballero, hopefully Jarrett being the referee leads to slap nuts against the Tribal Chief at WrestleMania. Jarrett wins in the end and TNA gets revenge. Food Hive, you're a heel for adding SmackDown to the Friday streams. You know, hey, I you almost have to. Nobody cares. You look at the numbers, you give the people what they want. The numbers spoke for themselves. Even the people who hate SmackDown, they want to at least know what's going on SmackDown, or they want to be filled in on the show so they don't have to watch it. The numbers for SmackDown on Friday are generally much better than they would be for Rampage alone. Since I was already watching Rampage, it didn't make any sense to not watch SmackDown. If I already watched SmackDown, why wouldn't I talk about it? So that's why I did what I did. And if that makes me a heel, then I'm okay with that. I embrace the heel role. I am a heel at heart. Wait until you see the next Sound Off Gamer, which is going to be dropping next week. Spicy Dried Chicken. Here's my WWE brain cell idea. I thought that said brain dead idea. I read that too fast. I mean, you're talking about WWE creative, brain dead. I mean, it kind of all goes together, you know? It kind of makes sense. But his idea is a program with Lacey Evans against Alexa Bliss with Lily the Doll. What does that mean, by the way? Brain cell... Maybe he meant brain dead. Is that what you meant? I think he meant brain dead. I'm just thinking now, brain cell. What the fuck does that even mean? That doesn't even make any sense. WWE's brain cell idea. Shaquille Oatmeal with the $4.99. End a year-long debate between my friend and I. Who is the better wrestler, Triple H or Eddie Guerrero? And is Triple H a top 15 wrestler of all time? I appreciate you. Oh, well, you're going to get some really divided opinion on this. Me, personally, better wrestler, Eddie Guerrero or Triple H. Triple H was the better heel. Triple H, at times in his career, was a fantastic heel. And Eddie was a very good heel as well, but he was never kind of at that top level as a heel the way that Triple H was. Eddie was a more beloved babyface, though, than Triple H ever was. So he kind of had a leg up on him in that way. Eddie, before he really just wore himself down there, and physically, I don't know if you could pinpoint what the year was that he really began his descent. And you go back and watch a lot of his stuff in 2005, the year he died, I mean, you could tell he was in pain, but you could tell, like, he was also just not physically at his best. And he also had put on so much muscle mass for a guy his size, you know, and Benoit was the same thing. Yeah, they were carrying around so much muscle mass that they didn't have earlier in their career, and they probably should never have had. And I think it diminished their skills as time went on, as far as their in-ring ability is concerned. But Eddie, you know, Eddie was just, as a character and as a personality, when he was on, I mean, he was the fucking man. So, me personally, I probably would go with Eddie over Triple H. Do I consider Triple H to be top 15 of all time? I don't. I don't think he would be on my top 15. That's my opinion. We've got Food Hive. The real pain maker is whoever runs creative at WWE. Well said. Spicy Dried Chicken. Okada over White. Naito over Ospreay. It is coming. Like Veer. Andre Israel. Buy, rent, or sell on a new super chat. 1, Security Geeks. 2, Anthony Bowen's Scissor Me Daddy S. Or 3, Drew McIntyre's giant plastic bending sword. I don't know. Darth Panic showing love to Solomonster and the Sound Off family from Petco Park. I've never been to Petco Park, but I've heard it's one of the nicest stadiums in all of baseball. And is Petco Park the one where they have like a giant swimming pool in the outfield? I'm trying to think if that's the one. I don't remember. It might be, but I've heard that Petco Park is actually a very nice park. Spicy dry chicken. My G1 Climax 32 winners is Naito over Okada. Okay. At least he has finally settled on one winner. Unlike, was it a couple of years ago where he was rattling off a whole bunch of names? Groovy Goose. Have you ever watched Pat McAfee's show outside of wrestling-related interviews and content? It's entertaining. I will give it that. I've checked it out here and there. I'm not really big into all the football discussion and everything, so I'm not really going to be, you know, watching any sports shows every day or every week. It looks like an entertaining show, though. Pat's very good at what he does. Food Hive, your favorite AEW promo, not including MJF or Punk? Probably Christian Cage. Drew Johnson with the $5 super chat. Solomonster, you're the man. Love your streams, bro. Thank you, Drew. That's very nice of you. Paul Heyman. I have an Austin theory. If Roman makes it to Survivor Series as the unified champion, does this mean that we're getting Roman versus Roman at Survivor Series? You know, I didn't really think about it that way. I didn't really think about it that way, but the brother might actually have to beat himself. He might have to beat himself at Survivor Series. I hadn't really thought about it like that, but I guess the way Survivor Series usually works, it would have to be Roman Reigns against Roman Reigns. He might beat himself over the head with a kendo stick and knock himself out. Yes, as Austin said, I'll tell you what though, if we get that match, it's going to make my prediction show a hell of a lot easier this year for Survivor Series. I have a hunch that Roman would go over in that match. Roman Reigns will be the first to beat Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is so good that the only person who can beat Roman Reigns is Roman Reigns. The bigger question is, I should ask you, Paul Heyman, what is Paul Heyman going to do? Whose corner is Paul Heyman going to be in? It's going to be like Elizabeth at WrestleMania 5. She's going to be conflicted. She's not going to know whose corner to be in. I should be asking you the question. I should be sending you a super chat and asking you, Paul Heyman, what you plan on doing. EJ Slamp, what if WWE had someone who was a model like Max Dupree and took selfies like Theory? Oh, wait, they did. In Tyler Breeze. I wish he had half the push that Theory has. Well, his problem is he didn't have half the physique that Theory has. Looks are very important in this company. And a guy who looks like Tyler Breeze and a guy who looks like Johnny Gargano and people like that are not going to get a whole lot of attention from Vince McMahon. Be calm, see clearly. The $5 super chat. Kingston turns on Claudio and takes that Ring of Honor championship. And Kingston and Claudio headline some big shows. So that's interesting. Eddie Kingston turns on Claudio and takes the ROH title. That's assuming that Claudio wins the title next weekend. That's possible. That's possible. EJ Slemp, how many ballparks have you been to? I've been to 13. I might be going to Petco Park in September, and it is Chase Field in Phoenix that has the pool. Ah, yes, Chase Field. That's where they did the Royal Rumble a few years ago. That's what I was thinking of. They had the pool that was closed, unfortunately. I remember I pitched this whole idea where they were going to have heavy machinery, you know, cooking steaks in the outfield by the pool, hanging out in the pool during the Rumble pay-per-view. I was so disappointed they didn't do it. I fed them this great idea, and they did nothing with it. Randy Bobandi, saw your last sound off, ketchup belongs on hot dogs. I had somebody send me a message the other day telling me that in the state of Tennessee, there are people who have hot dogs with mayonnaise on them. That is revolting. That is absolutely these are the people that are going to cheer for Jeff Jarrett at SummerSlam this year. All you people going to Nashville for SummerSlam at that stadium, you might just see people eating hot dogs with mayo on them. I am very happy to not be going to SummerSlam this year. I don't think I could handle the sight of that. That just sounds putrid to me. Oh my God, you reminded me. That's right. That was also around 2005, right? 2006? Because Kurt was gone in 2006. That's the year he left WWE. So it had to be maybe the year before that. He had that feud on SmackDown with Booker T, and he was obsessed with Charmel. He was obsessed with Booker, and he flat out said on television, I want to have hot bestiality sex with your wife. That's what he said. I want to have hot bestiality sex with your wife. But Kurt Angle said to Charmel. And I'm just thinking, boy, settle down, boy. Easy there, brother. Easy there, boy. Kurt Angle was, man. He was in the zone, all right. He was on something. I don't know what was going on there during that period. How he ever agreed to that. See, people forgot. They forgot that Kurt did that angle and said that. Then we had Perk Angle and TNA. We've had many phases of Kurt Angle. We had Kurt Angle, the Olympic champion, right? The three I's, intensity, integrity, and intelligence. And then we had Kurt Angle, the machine, the wrestling machine in 2002, Bald Angle in 2002 and 2003. Then we had bestiality sex Kurt Angle in 2005. Then we had Perk Angle and TNA. And eventually we had the Raw general manager, Kurt Angle. For one night, we had Kurt Angle as a member of the Shield. We had Kurt Angle as Los Conquistador. Remember when he dressed up in the Conquistador costume and he won a battle royal on Monday Night Raw? We've had a lot of different Kurt Angles over the years. Jamin John, if the Brian Pillman gun segment happened today, what would the reaction be? I think social media would have a meltdown. It would be great to just kind of put up a bag of popcorn, sit back, and just watch the world burn. Just watch the whole community just burn to the ground. Drew Johnson, Solomon, sir, you are the GOAT of wrestling reviews. Thank you for everything you do. Proud member of the channel. Well, Drew, I am proud to have you as a member of the channel. I am proud to have you on the streams. You have been a great supporter of my work, and I appreciate the sentiment. I know Drew's a big Shawn Michaels guy. I'm sure Drew enjoyed the sexy Kurt segment when he was impersonating Shawn Michaels on SmackDown back in 2005. 420 baked chicken with flavor. Ketchup on my hot dog brings me back to age 12. That's about the cutoff for when you should be having hot dog or having ketchup on your hot dog. I was going to say maybe six years old, but 12 might be okay. Best Michael Jackson album in your opinion, Thriller. I mean, how is that even up for debate? We've got a few more coming in here. We've got Drew Johnson, Sexy Kurt was legit. That was a great segment. It was great to see Sherry, too. Took me a while before I realized that it was Sherry's voice at the beginning of Sean's theme music. But it was nice to see her part of that segment. Spicy dried chicken. Having chicken and waffles with syrup is the best, though. Chicken and waffles. I never had chicken and waffles until one of the first meetups, funny enough. One of the first Sound Off meetups that I ever did was at the it was a beer garden in it was over by the Barclays Center, the KBH. I have had a whole bunch of events at the KBH, and it was maybe the first one I ever did there. And I met up with all of you guys. We had a great turnout that night. I got a picture on my wall over there of we got the big crowd shot at the end of the meetup. It was me and like just a sea of people, like 100 or 150 people, however many people were there. And it was at that beer hall that I had chicken and waffles for the first time in my life. And I fell in love, and I thought, man, this is great that I didn't know about this until now, because had I known about how great chicken and waffles were, I would be 400 pounds right now. I'd have to get a wide-angle lens on this camera. It would be very bad. But I can attest now that I've had it the one time that chicken and waffles are fantastic. You lather on the syrup. It is quite good. Drew Johnson, eating sheets, but what is that? What does that say? Sheets bruto? I'm not sure. Eating sheets bruto and cheeseburger after I finish my beer. HBK is the goat. Good night, Solid Monster. Well, good night, Drew. Enjoy your brutes or bruto, whatever that is. Randy Bobandi with the $9.99. If Mabel did not botch and hurt The Undertaker, Nash, among others, could you see him getting the world championship run? No. No. Mabel should not have been anywhere near the world championship. Mabel was awful. And Drew Johnson, it is a burrito. Oh, okay. So he admits, too many beers. So I'm not the one who suddenly is dyslexic and can't read here, so he misspelled it. I didn't know what you were trying to say. I'm reading it. It goes B-R-U-T-I-O. I'm like, brutio. I don't know why I'm saying it like that. Brutio. He goes, no, it's a burrito. I said, well, I know what a burrito is. Silver Dollar, 1989. Mayonnaise is revolting, period. You are awesome. That'd be a great name for a heel. Mayonnaise. You think they could trademark that? They love to trademark and own everything. I guess they couldn't own mayonnaise, so maybe they change a letter in there. Like China became China with a Y. But I think a heel named I mean, based on what I'm seeing here in the chat tonight, we've got a lot of people who hate mayonnaise. I think it'd be the biggest heel in all of wrestling. Or maybe that's part of their finish. They squirt mayonnaise all over people. I guess the visual of that, though, would be kind of inappropriate. Sheamus' new gimmick. It wouldn't make sense for Sheamus because it would just kind of blend in, you know? It doesn't really work. It has to be, I don't know, I feel like R-Truth or something. It would work. He can make it work. That's right, Cena used to call Sheamus a jar of mayonnaise. All right, let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
It's getting late. I want to make sure we be the booker here tonight before I let you guys go here. Can't let you get away without doing that first. Let's book a few matches here. We head into the weekend. We'll start on the men's side, and we begin things with, oh boy. Weren't we just talking about Jim Cornette? I'm talking about Jim Cornette, and all of a sudden I have a picture of Vince Russo on my screen. And somewhere, Cornette, his ears are ringing. His blood is boiling. Oh boy. Former WCW champion, bro. Bro, you want to be the book of bro? You think you could do my job, bro? You can't do my job, bro. I'll have you know, Cornette is in this thing, so wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something if it landed on him? It'll be Vince Russo going one-on-one with Brock Lesnar. Yes! I love it. I love it. I get to see Brock Lesnar suplex Vince Russo around 20 times. Release German suplexes. What can be better than that? Book it. Book it. That's a fucking match I'd love to see. Let's see Vince Russo running for his life, trying to get away from Brock Lesnar. I love it. That I would pay to see. On the women's side, we begin with AJ Lee, former Divas champion. AJ Lee. Probably will never wrestle again. And if she doesn't, had a nice career for herself. AJ Lee, frankly, had more to do with this whole women's revolution nonsense than probably any other single person, to be honest with you, including Stephanie McMahon, who, as we all know, she invented the women's revolution. AJ Lee going one-on-one with Betty White. I can't vote against Betty White. It's Betty White. Betty White is awesome. Betty White will always be awesome. Betty White passed away right before her 100th birthday. Very unfair. It was within days of her 100th birthday she passed away, but Betty White will always live on forever. Betty White and AJ Lee. It sounds like the cutest match of all time. I love me some AJ Lee, and I love me some Betty White. Betty White was awesome. So now we go to the tag team side, and what do we have? We begin with Hulk Hogan and Edge, former tag team champions. In fact, it was 20 years ago this month, on July 4th, that Hogan and Edge won the tag team titles on SmackDown from the Un-Americans. And I believe, what was it, the Un-Americans? Or was it Billy and Chuck? Well, I know they lost the belts to the Un-Americans. All of a sudden, I'm not sure if they beat the Un-Americans or if they just lost them back to the Un-Americans. But in any event, they were tag team champions there for a few weeks. Let's see. Hulk Hogan and Edge are going to be taking on the dream team of Greg the Hammer Valentine and Hogan's BFF, or former BFF, Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Not a fan of that match. I was on the fence. I was thinking about it. Yeah, it would have been very tempting to hit the bell on all three, but eh. Not really a fan of that match. Was it Billy and Chuck? All right. I think they beat Billy and Chuck, but then they lost to the Un-Americans. I think that's the sequence of events there. Not bad, though. We had some interesting matches. We get to see Brock Lesnar kill Vince Russo in the ring. We get to see Betty White, see what her in-ring skills are like against AJ Lee. And then Hogan and Edge against Beefcake and Valentine. Not a terrible match, but not exactly a match that I would book for my main event. But look, Hogan, you know, back then, Hogan was still over. He was over like Rover. You put Hogan, he's going to be in the main event. Guys like Brock Lesnar and Hulk Hogan, if you're trying to book a main event, you're gonna put those guys in your main event. Ricky Edmond, top five SmackDown endings. I don't know about top five, but you know I could tell you two of them. I think the best SmackDown ending has to be the first ring collapse before they ran that gimmick into the ground, right? Brock Lesnar and Big Show back in 2003, I guess it would have been. So you got to go with the ring collapse. And there was a SmackDown episode back in 2000 or 2001 where all the big names, they were just coming out one right after the other, hitting their finishes. And it was Austin, it was Rock, it was Undertaker. I don't remember if Kurt Angle might have been part of it. Big Show, maybe. It was just this very chaotic ending. And that's one of the greatest SmackDown endings as well. Food Hive, Billy and Chuck, greatest theme and greatest wedding. That was a great wedding segment with Bischoff doing the whole reveal, 3-minute warning stuff there. Stephanie took a Samoan drop. The Bischoff thing, that was one of those rare segments that on paper it's like, okay, this is going to suck. This is going to be terrible. And it ended up being actually a very good segment, a very memorable segment. The Nexus ending, the Nexus ending was on Raw. So much squandered potential with that angle. It still makes me upset when I think about how badly they botched that. They could have gotten months more out of that whole angle. What a shame. All right, guys, thank you for hanging out with me here on a Friday night. As always, I appreciate it. Appreciate you choosing me for your Smack Page coverage. I hope you'll do so again next week. We are going to have episode 765 of the flagship dropping on all the usual audio platforms on Sunday. There is a brand new Sound of Gamer, for those who don't know, went up earlier in the week. Right there, Solomonster achieves the boyhood dream that he has strived for his entire life. In the main event of WrestleMania. You've got to see it to believe it. That's episode 7 of My Rise, Sound of Gamer. That is up right now. I can tell you that episode 8 is going to be going up early next week. So either Monday or Tuesday, there will be a brand new episode of Sound of Gamer. I think it's even better than this one. So you'll definitely want to check that out. Hopefully you are enjoying that series as much as I am putting it together for you. And I think that's about it. We do have the Ring of Honor pay-per-view next weekend, and then the weekend after that already is SummerSlam. There's actually 2 pay-per-views that weekend, the final weekend of the month. SummerSlam is on Saturday, the 30th. And then Sunday, the 31st, is that whole pay-per-view they're putting together based around Ric Flair's final match. And the funniest thing about that is they put together a whole card so far. There's actually a bunch of really good matches on that card. The one match that we still don't know is the Ric Flair match. The entire show is being built around this being Ric Flair's final match. They still haven't even announced what the match is going to be. So we don't know if it'll be a tag match. We don't know if it'll be a singles match. I guess we'll have to see. Depending on what the final card looks like, that might be a show that I also watch and review for all of you. So we might have some other pay-per-views outside of SummerSlam to review on the channel this month. A shout-out to Mark Adams for the sub. I appreciate it. Ricky Edmond, top 5 MCU movies. I haven't seen too many of the MCU movies. I've seen the, first Avengers movie and some of the early Spider-Man movies, but like the Hulk movies and the Fantastic Four and the Captain America one and, I saw the first Iron Man movie. I haven't seen too many, honestly. I really haven't. There's just so many of them now. So overwhelming. I feel like I'd have to start from the very beginning. So I don't even think I could put a top 5 together. But the original Avengers movie was very good. I don't know about this Infinity War stuff with Thanos and the glove and everything. I didn't see any of that. I know he snaps his fingers and everybody disappeared, so I know that. But haven't seen too many of them. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Food Hive, for correcting me. I forgot. Every time I say SummerSlam, I am forgetting to put the word the in tribute to Bret Hart. I have to call it the SummerSlam. I stand corrected. It is the SummerSlam. Spicy dry chicken finger poke of doom or 2019 Hell in a Cell main event finish. I just laughed at the finger poke of doom. I was more of a WWE guy anyway than a WCW guy. So I did what Vince McMahon probably did. I just laughed. And I changed the channel and I put Raw on. The 2019 thing made me a lot angrier. Would Solomonster disappear in the snap? In the Thanos snap? No, I am immune. I am immune from that. It would have no effect on me. I wish I could snap my fingers and make Raw and SmackDown disappear. Tobey Maguire was the best Spider-Man. Tobey Maguire is still the only Spider-Man that I've ever seen. I didn't see the Andrew Garfield ones and whoever the new guy is now doing it. Who's the new guy now doing it? Isn't it like one of the Jonas Brothers or something? I don't know. Tobey Maguire is the only Spider-Man that I've seen. Finger poke to say the finger poke of doom killed WCW is, you know, that's giving that a little too much credit. There was no one thing that killed WCW. Tom Holland, I'm sorry, yes, Tom Holland. What did I say? Tom Holland, he was also Spider-Man, right? I tell you what, I think I would have made a good Peter Parker. I'm just saying. I got that boy next door kind of look. You know, you want to bring home to your daughter, you know? I think I would have made a great Peter Parker. Uncle Ben and Aunt May. All right, I'm going to get out of here now. I'm auditioning for Spider-Man here on my stream. I will see you guys live again on YouTube next Wednesday for the Dynamite stream. We got barbed wire everywhere. Hey, Steve, if Steve's watching this at some point, we need barbed wire all over the artwork for Wednesday. We got to get barbed wire everywhere in preparation for the Dynamite stream. I'll see you on Sunday for 7:65. Take care, guys.